North Korea firing yet another missile from its capital, Pyongyang, early Friday morning, local time. Again, flying it over Japan. The launch coming just a day after North Korea threatened to sink Japan and reduce the United States to, quote, ashes and darkness for supporting a UN Security Council resolution imposing new sanctions against it for its nuclear test in early September.
Fundamentally, you know, companies are not buying hardware like they used to, but they're certainly buying software, but also in a different way than they used to. And Oracle's showing terrific success right there. And it looks like, if my calculator's working, we've got 84% year-over-year growth in their cloud business,
wow,
which is just amazing.
NASA's Cassini spacecraft is coming to a fiery end, set to make its farewell dive into Saturn's atmosphere on Friday morning. Wrapping up a 13-year mission orbiting Saturn, collecting data, that mission has provided groundbreaking discoveries that included seasonal changes on Saturn and a global ocean on the moon Enceladus with ice plumes spouting from its surface. Scientists say that blowing up the craft will ensure that any hitchhiking Earth microbes still alive on Cassini will not contaminate the moons for future study, and they may have the potential to support indigenous microbial life.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's September 15th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell and the final business day of the week. Lots to cover this morning. The markets and more with our portfolio specialist, Paul Nolte, will be joining us momentarily. Also a little bit later, weathering a financial storm caused by disaster. Very timely conversation in the wake of Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, and ahead of any other disaster that might be coming. That'll be coming a little later in the broadcast. But first, we begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. We'll begin in London, Europe, with the latest on a terrorist incident at a subway station in London. The mayor of London within the last half hour or so saying the city's not going to be intimidated or defeated by terrorism. This after what appears to be some small white container exploded on the underground tube at a station, injuring several people. The smell of chemicals could be smelled by those passengers who reported a massive flash of flames that reached up to the ceiling of the train. We're monitoring the very latest from London, and we will have more as we get it throughout the morning. In London this morning, markets are generally lower with the FTSE off about 1% now, 74 points. The DAX is off about 7 points. The CAC is off just a fraction. In Asia, stocks are generally mixed this morning with the Nikkei up 102 points. That's good for about 0.5%. The Hang Seng up just a little bit. The Shanghai is lower. The Asian Dow is lower. Futures in this country pointing to opening losses on Wall Street. The Dow futures off about 10 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Crude oil is trading at $49.90 a barrel, which is up just a fraction this morning. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. China, one of China's biggest Bitcoin exchanges, says it will stop trading at the end of the month following reports that regulators have ordered all Chinese exchanges for the digital currency to close. BTC China says it's acting in the spirit of a central bank order last week that banned initial coin offerings. It gave no indication that it had directly ordered that close. Interest in China in Bitcoin surged last year as the currency's price rose, but trading dwindled after regulators tightened controls and warned the currency might be linked to fraud. Similar comment earlier this week by Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan Chase, calling it Bitcoin a fraud. We'll talk a little bit about this with Paul Nolte coming up here. Some big news in the auto world this morning. The Renault-Nissan alliance is ramping up electric car production. 12 new models coming by 2022, according to the car makers. 30% of its overall production is what that will come out to be. Car makers have also announced a push toward autonomous vehicles. This is important because Renault-Nissan is selling more cars than any other manufacturer in the first half of 2017, looking to ride on its growing reach by expanding electric vehicles into the mass market. Well, let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning here on The Opening Bell. Paul is a Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. He's with us every Friday to sort of go over the week in economics and talk a little bit about our portfolios. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
I know you've had a busy week with all kinds of family and wedding stuff, right? Congratulations.
Thank you. One of my nephews got married last night. So it was a very fun event.
Well, I'm glad you had time to make time for us this morning. I know it's been a busy week, but talk to us about what you saw as the biggest economic news of the week.
You know, we got both the inflation from the producer prices and the consumer price indexes, and both of those came in a little on the softer side, and certainly nothing to warrant a big jump by the Fed as far as interest rates go. So when we take a look at the futures about interest rate hikes, they bumped up a little bit. But certainly, I think the Fed is going to stay on the sidelines here. And their meeting coming up next week, I think, they're going to be probably spending a lot more time talking about their balance sheet, what they're going to be doing to that balance sheet, and hopefully starting to reduce the size of their balance sheet by allowing some of the securities to roll off as opposed to reinvesting the proceeds. Why that's important for the financial markets. You know, the financial markets have really risen a fair amount based on the quantitative easing policies and buying of all of those bonds from the financial crisis into 2014. So my thought is, at least, that the unwinding of their balance sheet may cause disruption in the financial markets. And again, not so much from the economy. The economy really did not jump on quantitative easing. It did not really improve significantly at quantitative easing. So I don't think it's going to be affected as much as the Fed starts to unwind their balance sheet.
You mentioned the Fed. There's a little bit of news happening in that area this morning. President Trump, I think late yesterday, said he had not made a decision on whether or not he's going to renominate Janet Yellen for Federal Reserve Chair, but says he has a lot of respect for her. Is that any indication of what we might see coming from the White House?
It's possible. You know, Trump has moved his position on Janet Yellen a lot. He's been very, he's been playing poker, if you will. He's not showing his cards at all. But he does have, right now, three, four, with the most recent retirement, new appointees that he can make to the board. So right now, the Fed total board members, because of the recent retirement, has an opportunity to appoint three to four new governors immediately. I know Janet Yellen is the headliner, if you will, being the Fed chair, but he has the ability now to appoint those other board members and can move on that. But hasn't chosen to do so yet.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A new lawsuit has been filed against Google. The company is accused of gender-based pay discrimination. A lawyer representing three women who formerly worked for Google is seeking class action status for the lawsuit. A federal labor investigation made preliminary findings of systematic pay discrimination among 21,000 employees at Google's Mountain View, California headquarters. Women made less than men in nearly every job classification. Hyundai Motor will launch its first midsize sports sedan under the Genesis brand in South Korea next week and in the U.S. early next year. This is the latest attempt by the emerging Korean luxury brand to challenge BMW's 3 Series and other European premium cars. Asian stocks were mostly lower today. On Wall Street Thursday, stocks finished the day mixed. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, one of the things I saw this week that one of the economic reports was the job openings reports. It says about 6.7, 6.2 million job openings in the United States. What do you think of that figure?
You know, it's up a little bit, but really when you take a look at the report overall, it is supportive still of a very strong job market. And what we saw in the jobs data that was released a couple of weeks ago is where a lot of the jobs are being created is in the service industry, so restaurants and such. And that, I think, too, is leading to a much lower wage growth, because obviously those jobs are not paying nearly as much as, say, maybe a manufacturing or a much higher-end type of job. So there's some information in that report, I think, that is supportive still of a relatively good job market. And I think that's going to be the way the economy is going to go. has been going all year and probably will continue to remain strong, I think, through the end of the year.
One of the other bright spots, I thought, in the report was that the number of people who quit their jobs has been on the rise, and that what generally means people are leaving their jobs for better pay, right?
Well, they're leaving. They feel comfortable in leaving their job for something else. And generally, yes, you're true. It's true that they're leaving for another job. And it's one of the things that we like to see, as odd as it sounds, is that people feel comfortable in leaving their job and hopefully going to something else. That indicates at least that there is mobility within the job market. And that's very important for not only the housing sector, but a lot of other parts of the economy. To see the ability for people to change jobs regularly.
In the opening of the program, we talked about China and Bitcoin and Jamie Dimon and Bitcoin this week. Jamie Dimon calling Bitcoin a fraud. What are your thoughts on this? Is he off base or is he onto something?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's been called a cryptocurrency. And I think everybody gets hung up on the currency part of the cryptocurrency definition. I don't think it really qualifies as a currency. For a currency, you want to have it pervasive. You want to have it access to everybody. You want to be able to purchase everything and anything that you want to. And it really needs to be stable. You know, when you take a look at the U.S. dollar, everybody's been wringing their hands in the fact that the U.S. dollar is down 10% this year and how terrible that is. Bitcoin has fallen 12% just this week. So what does that mean if you're using Bitcoin for purchasing? It's a wonderful thing because now all of a sudden the price of everything has gone down 12%. But by the same token, so far this year, Bitcoin has gone up threefold. So now you're seeing, if you're purchasing things with Bitcoin, you're seeing a threefold increase in the price of goods or services that you might be using it for. And I don't think really from a currency perspective, you're going to be using it to buy goods and services and so on. Something that is that volatile and not really backed by anything, and again, not pervasive throughout the economy, makes it very, very difficult to call it a currency. In some cases, some people have called it a commodity along the lines of a gold or silver or platinum. But I'm really struggling to say that it's truly a currency. Because it really doesn't fit that definition of what a currency should be.
What do you like here at the end of the week, Paul?
Oh, we're still very comfortable holding the international markets. They've stumbled here a little bit. We saw a good rally early in the week in the stock market, but really since that time, it's been kind of waffling around the zero line. So we've taken a little bit of money off the table. The markets are up a little bit better than 10% year-to-date. So we've basically have taken some of those profits off the table and moved them over to the fixed income market. We don't think interest rates are going that much higher. And we've seen the markets really kind of struggle here over the last 6 months or so, especially compared to what's happening in the bond market. So we think we're getting a little bit better value in bonds and stocks and a little less volatility as well. So we're very comfortable taking some money off the table at this juncture.
Very nice. Paul, have a great weekend, and we will see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you then.
All right. Paul Nolte, SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about Paul and Kingsview at kingsview.com.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, Apple freshening up its most successful wearable. CEO Tim Cook says sales of Apple Watch have grown 50% in the last year, making it the number one watch in the world ahead of Rolex. But Engadget's Dana Wolman tells us the forthcoming Series 3 watch isn't a giant leap forward.
All told, it seems like a fairly modest upgrade. It's about the same size as the previous watch. It can be used with the same bands.
With this iteration, Apple is putting more emphasis on the device's heart rate monitor.
And also Apple is teaming up with researchers to collect data that could potentially help patients with heart arrhythmias, which is great news.
And for the first time, it's being offered with LTE cellular connectivity, so users no longer have to be tethered to their iPhone.
You can certainly buy it that way, but you don't need to get on board with that just to get the new watch.
It'll come in a variety of band styles and colors. Prices start at $329. With Tech Trends, I'm Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 here on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you with us. Over the course of the last week and a half or 2 weeks, the U.S. has been hit by two major disasters, Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. A lot of the people that were hit by the storm, not only have they had damage and emotional toll from this, but a financial storm has also hit their households. Thought we'd talk a little bit about this. This month is National Preparedness Month, September is, and Pat Cotaletta is here. She's one of the top financial advisors at Morgan Stanley. Pat, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is your specialty, right? You help people prepare for the worst.
Well, I have a good friend who's an attorney, an estate attorney, who always says you should hope for the best, but always prepare for the worst.
So, So what do you tell your clients? What's the best advice here? Because I would imagine some of this stuff is not front of mind.
Well, I think the best advice is to realize that anything can happen at any point in time. And so you don't want to sit around and worry about it or pine about the what-ifs of life, but you have to be ready for them. And that includes things like having some cash on hand. If you have a short-term emergency, there are a lot of repair organizations, good legitimate people who would prefer to be paid in cash, or you might go to the head of the list if you have cash available. And it's amazing to me how many people will carry $10 in their wallet and assume they can always go to an ATM. Well, that's not always the case. What if the ATMs aren't working for some particular reason? So I think having some emergency cash and there's not any magic number, but having some emergency cash in your home in small bills that you can get a hold of if you have to is essential. And then we talk about grab-and-go kits. Many people think of a grab-and-a-go kit, but it has to do with make sure your medicines are handy and make sure you have the dog's leash and that kind of thing. Well, you also ought to have a financial grab-and-go kit, and that should include things like your credit card numbers, the contact information for your homeowner's insurance and your car insurance, the insurance policy numbers. I don't know that you necessarily have to carry the policy, but you should have the policy numbers. Whatever you would need to be able to call your insurance company and say, hey, I have a problem. Please help me out.
Yeah, that's probably one of the best ideas I've heard in a long time, because you're right. We all should have that, and some of us do have that emergency kit ready to go. You know, we always tell people here, too, have a couple of days' supply of water and food.
Exactly.
But we don't think of having that financial part of that. It's probably worth having a safe in your home, if you don't, right, to keep some of this stuff?
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to walk around with a big wad of cash in your pocket. That makes you potentially a target. But, yes, I think having a small safe in your house so that you know exactly where all these things are and you can get to them fast.
What about having just basic knowledge of finances in disasters? I mean, because things change, don't they? I mean, there's some financial things that change in disasters. So you mentioned the ATM go away. You may not have access to a bank. You may not be able to call your bank.
Right.
So you need to sort of have, I mean, one of the things that I bet a lot of people don't know is their routing number, right? If they have to get something out of their bank, is that one of the keys things?
Well, except you usually aren't going to be able to do that with verbal instructions. So you ought to know how to contact your bank. You need to know what your bank account number is. But as far as a routing number, that's basically the mechanism by which you wire money, and you're not going to be able to do that without a signature. But you need to be able to have access to money. So you need to be able to have savings account money moved into your checking account, for example.
Mm-hmm. Before we came on the air, we were sharing stories of when these kinds of situations would arise. You talked about a flooding situation where the contractor wanted money, cash, hard cash. I was talking about a snow situation where the plow people. I mean, so these are real, situations where you need to have money and not checks or plastic.
Right, and these are not giant disasters that affected thousands of people. Maybe they affect one homeowner.
Yeah.
But if that homeowner's you, then you want to be prepared.
Giant disasters, insurance is always, we always think, well, I have homeowner's insurance that's going to be covered. We're hearing all of these horror stories now from the hurricane zones where people didn't have flood insurance. Right. They let it lapse. How big is insurance in this equation?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, insurance literally will put you back on your feet. And long before you know what the claim is going to be, in other words, long before you can truly assess the damage, you should start the claims process. Because, the early bird gets the worm, so to speak, as far as attention is concerned. So you don't have to wait to find out what your car is worth or to wait to find out how much of your home is destroyed or what the repair is going to be. Get the process started.
It's also a proactive thing, too. If you aren't sure you're in a floodplain, don't wait for somebody to come and tell you you are right. Or you're not. Go out and find that out, because not having flood insurance could bankrupt you, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And this is the problem in the first hurricane. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that most of the people in that area, those with means and those not with means, it didn't make much difference. Most of them did not have flood insurance, period.
And that's going to be a huge deal going forward. And I think probably, you know, making all of this worse is if you have a lot of debt, carrying a lot of debt into a disaster too, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely, because if you have a lot of debt, then you're not as nimble. You can't change your circumstances if you're locked into so much debt that you can't borrow any money. If you need an emergency repair and you have an open line of credit and that line of credit has a lot of excuse me, liquidity in it, you're in a much better shape than if you're borrowed up to the hilt and you can't borrow anymore.
One of the other things that happens after disasters, too, are just the high number of scams that develop. Yeah. How do you protect? How do we? I mean, it's almost like predators are everywhere after these kinds of disasters. How do you even begin to protect yourself?
Well, I think you have to look at everything with a little bit of jaundice. You just have to be a little bit cynical. And that doesn't mean that you don't trust anybody, because that's certainly not fair. But you have to make sure as best you can that you're dealing with a reputable contractor. If you get two bids or three bids and one of them is much lower than the others, be very, very cautious. If you have a contractor who says, you know, I don't have any work right now, or I don't have a big waiting list of people, that would make me a little nervous. You just have to be a little bit cynical when you're interviewing people.
Fast forward to the end of the disaster when you might be getting back on your feet. Financial planning is important then, too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Financial planning is important all the time.
Yeah.
But after the disaster is over, again, you don't want to make knee-jerk kinds of decisions. You want to pay off the bills as best you can. You want to negotiate with your insurance companies as best you can. Planning is always important.
One of the things I saw that's happening in Florida, I think, and also in Texas, the government has announced that people with 401ks can dip into their 401k right. In an emergency. Is that something that's standard? Or is
without penalty.
Yeah. Is that something new, or has that always been the case when disasters hit?
As far as I know, that's new.
Is that something is that a viable alternative?
Well, it's an alternative, I guess, if you don't have any other alternative. Mm-hmm. We hate to see people dip into their retirement savings early, because it's not going to be there then when you want to retire, unless you have a real methodology of paying it back. So is it possible, and is it certainly useful for some people? Yes, but it is not the first place you should go to get money.
What is the best first step for folks to get more information about this? I'm guessing you would want to sit down with them, right?
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Go through this.
Absolutely. It's all part of the financial planning process. Mm-hmm. Financial planning is not just about managing your money. Financial planning is about protecting your money. Financial planning is about making sure your priorities are straight and making sure you've taken care of the emergencies of life. It's amazing how many people in this country cannot come up with $500 to $1,000 in an emergency without really struggling.
Do you sometimes find yourself playing a disaster claims adjuster as well for your clients?
No.
Are they? I'm hoping they're all prepared for it when it happens, right?
Pretty much. If they're clients of ours, hopefully they're prepared, yes.
Yeah. Pat, it's good to see you and talk to you, and thanks for coming back on the Opening Bell and getting up with us this early.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Patricia Cuttoletta with Morgan Stanley here in Chicago. You can find more information online. We'll link out to all of her profile information here on the Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:53 on the WGN. Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. A little weakness in the futures market. Dow futures off about 6. NASDAQ futures off 9. S&P futures lower by about 3. Gold and silver also trading a little bit lower this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning for more on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, Steve. I'll tell you, the string of perfect weather for outdoor farm shows this summer moving into fall continues. Dry, no thunderstorm activity, and it is getting very dry out there in some of those corn and soybean fields. But from the standpoint of going to these outdoor ag shows, it's just been ideal so far.
Yeah, I know you guys had almost perfect weather for Farm Progress Show, and I know for the county fairs, people have been really kind of lucky, but it seems kind of dry out there.
It is. It's now very dry in many areas, not only affecting lawns, and it goes on to affect maybe maturity of soybeans and corn that's right now running behind average for this time of the year. So we're hoping that some of those storms and showers that Tom Skilling has been talking about will become reality sometime next week. But ideal. As a matter of fact, the last county fair in the Midwest on my list is my county fair where I showed a Guernsey calf as a kid. The Vernon County Fair in Viroqua, Wisconsin will end on Saturday or on Sunday. And that's really the last county fair this year. So,
yeah, I saw, speaking back to the drought part of this, the weather part of this, I saw something in the USDA weekly agriculture in drought report. 83% of spring wheat production is in an area experiencing drought. It seems like a high number.
That is a very high number, particularly after what we went through earlier this crop year in the Dakotas. You know, it was very dry and impacted the wheat crop considerably. And we also planted the smallest acreage to wheat in about a century this year because the prices haven't been all that good to induce farmers to increase the wheat supply. Soybeans, though, continuing to do pretty good in the market. And once again, China yesterday bought another 198,000 tons of U.S. soybeans as they continue some very heavy buying during August and into September. So we hit a one-month high on soybeans yesterday on that strong export demand. Meanwhile, in the livestock picture, we moved lower yesterday in both live cattle and hogs. And talking to one of the analysts in livestock trade this week, he said it could be January, February before we kind of settle down the cattle market and get prices again back to a profit side. So we've got plenty of pork, plenty of poultry, plenty of beef, and we've got plenty of corn and soybeans right now.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson, make sure you listen to tomorrow morning bright and early at 5 o'clock. It's the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, September 15th. Two reports coming out from the Commerce Department today. One deals with retail sales data for August. The other is business inventories for July. Also today, the Federal Reserve releases industrial production numbers for August. One of the other big events on the calendar today includes the Cassini spacecraft is going to be crashed into Saturn today, probably in a couple of hours, ending its big mission as it's been surveying the outer part of the solar system and taking some unbelievable photographs of Saturn and its moon. That'll happen, I think, at about 7:50 this morning, Chicago time. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, September 15th.